a legend of one man who persuaded his friends to watch every Godzilla movie ever made. This world is on the brink of destruction. We need you now, Godzilla Evangelists!
Godzilla Evangelists, a Geek Stew Network podcast, produced and hosted by Ryan Sargent, featuring Sam Schlenker and Joanna Brodecki.
Hello, Godzilla Evangelists. Ryan here. Just an unfortunate audio warning. Mine is a little messed up. It's an unfortunate problem, but the rest of this episode is pretty great, I think. So stay tuned for Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. Enjoy.
Another typical messy Godzilla Evangelist opening. Welcome to Godzilla Evangelist.
Godzilla messy opening.
Please don't talk about Godzilla's messy opening.
Godzilla Evangelist after dark. So we're doing a fan fiction episode, right? At some point?
Hell yeah.
I don't know if you want that.
And we can read my old idea for a Godzilla movie.
Was it erotic?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you pivoted so easily. Like, oh, yes, of course. Godzilla After Dark. We'll finally have the venue to read my nasty ass Godzilla story.
You said fan fiction. Fan fiction doesn't have to be erotic. I'm here with my multi-talented co-hosts, Sam and Joanna.
Woo!
Scriank.
And we just can't seem to get this guy out of the studio. It's frequent guest Matthew Trout.
That's President of Geek Stew and Interpol Agent Matthew Charles to you.
Today, we're talking about 1974's Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, which is the debut of the beloved Mechagodzilla character, and just a lot of fun.
Great way to put it, Ryan.
I can see the tension behind your face.
No.
So I'm curious to see what you say later. So after Toho made the last two Godzilla movies, for about as cheaply as humanly possible, and seeing the box office continue to drop, they thought, okay, maybe we should stop doing that. So they put a little more money, keyword is little, back into the series, as this was Godzilla's special 20th anniversary celebration. He had been around already for 1 to 2 generations.
One generation.
That's not how generations work. He'd been around for 2 to 3 generations.
Man, that nuclear lizard skin must not crack, because he's looking good in this film.
So 3 generations in 20 years means that on average, these are some almost 7-year-old parents.
No.
I'm just saying I'm twisting Ryan's words back in his face. So as the expression goes. So yeah, there had been several generations.
This is my dark secret, audience. I don't know what generations are.
I think it's supposed to be 20 years. I could be wrong.
2 generations have now grown up with Godzilla. And this one was eventually released in the US in the late 1970s by Cinema Shares. Initially under the name Godzilla vs. the Bionic Monster, but those of you who have an encyclopedic knowledge of crappy old TV might know that this was the era of the $6 million man and the Bionic Woman. So Universal Studios actually sued Cinema Shares and told them they couldn't release the movie under that name, so it was withdrawn and changed once more to Godzilla versus the Cosmic Monster.
Wow.
Cosmic Monster. Ooh, I don't like that.
They cut a few minutes, but it's basically the same movie. And yeah, it's no surprise they eventually changed the title back to Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. What's the off-the-cuff, non-spoilery reaction? What did you think when you started digging into this one?
I thought it felt like a return to form. A familiar setup, and we were back to mythic monsters and aliens and scientists
and islands.
Yeah, it was comfortable. It was like, ah, I felt this before.
It's a good word for it. It's like slipping into an old pair of slippers.
I feel like as I turned it on, went, okay, got a G rating. So this is for the children. And that framing recently has assisted my viewings of these films, knowing I'm not trying to rate it against, you know, a PG-13 or a 17 and up rating, what I would consider for the somersaults that could be done in the writing, you know, with that type of rating, what I would expect. I'm just, it's, you know, it's for the kids. And I'd say for the kids, they'd probably like it.
Faint praise, but all right, we won't dig into it too much yet, Mr. Matt.
For me, I think of this one as, it's just kind of pure fun. Very style over substance. If I dig too deep, it becomes very, very kind of messy and sloppy. But at the same time, there's just a sense of just kind of fun and joy and, I want to say lightheartedness, but then I remember how badly Anguirus gets the crap beaten out of him. But in general, just kind of a lightheartedness. Godzilla's going to fight a big robot Godzilla, and there's secret agents and all that good stuff. And it's just, this is comfortable. This feels right.
Well, I think I already gave my top line thoughts, which is, it's just a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with Matt that it's a big sloppy mess, but in a way that doesn't bother me at all. One thing I'll say right now is it is very clear why the children of Japan immediately fell in love with Mechagodzilla. He was born to be a toy, this guy.
Yeah, he's a tin toy. He's actually, hilariously, when I was growing up, my dad had a tin toy that actually fired its hands, like, basically like all of Mecha's fingers and toes all launch. My dad had a tin toy robot that did basically exactly that. And the moment Mecha fired all of his limbs, I was like, ooh, that's fun. Reminds me of childhood.
He's very fun. He's got beams coming from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He can spin his head around really fast to make a horse feel.
Rainbow breath.
Yeah, oh yeah. He has two different kinds of festive beam. He has the rainbow mm-hmm. beam, and he has like a lightning, like cartoon lightning beam. And sometimes at the same time.
And he has the fake Godzilla ray that he uses when he has the skin on.
It's just one of those things where, like, having seen later movies, I go like, oh yeah, they probably added a lot of stuff to Mechagodzilla as they went. No, right from the gate, he's just overloaded with weaponry that he proceeds to use.
Like, transparently, for sure stronger than Godzilla.
Yeah, that actually was something I really thought was successful about the movie. In a serious criticism sort of way, I thought that the fact that he was stronger than Godzilla, and he was stronger than Godzilla plus a friend at all times, you know, and you're like, oh, Godzilla's a real underdog here. That was, I think, much to the movie's credit, I think that was a good decision.
I agree.
Made me much more invested in those fights than I would have been had they been kind of like equals who were just sort of trading blows for the whole movie.
And now that we've heaped praise upon our bionic friend, let us dive into the synopsis. Here is the story of Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. Sound effects at the ready.
Screech!
Bumblebee.
All right, now that we're all limber, let's go. In Okinawa, the Princess Nami has a vision of a giant monster destroying a city while performing for tourists. The Shizumu brothers, Keisuke and Masahiko, witness this. And then independently discover an unusual piece of metal in a buried ritual chamber.
What?
Keisuke explores the latter with archaeologist Saiko, who believes the mural in the chamber describes a doomsday prophecy. They also find an unusual statue of a Shisa, which they take to the mainland for examination. Two strange men stalk the statue, and one attempts to steal it. After the first sign of the prophecy appears, so does Godzilla. Angelus, sensing something is wrong, confronts Godzilla and is horribly beaten, but not before revealing Godzilla, to be an imposter.
Bom, bom.
Meanwhile, Masahiko has the metal examined by Professor Miyajima, who believes it is from space. They witness a battle between the real Godzilla and the fake one, which turns out to be Mechagodzilla, a weapon built by alien invaders from a black hole. The battle ends in a draw, with both monsters injured. Keisuke and Saiko ferry the statue back to Okinawa, narrowly avoiding danger from the eight-faced aliens with the help of the other stalker.
I'm a reporter. Get me that cash.
Were you the one who protected me earlier on the boat?
Professor Miyajima is also captured by the aliens and forced to assist with Mechagodzilla's repairs, lest his daughter and Masahiko be killed. Finding out that his brother is missing, Keisuke goes after the others and is once again assisted by the mystery man, who turns out to be Interpol Agent Nanbara. Nanbara and Keisuke free Professor Miyajima and the others from the alien hideout, but only after the repairs are complete.
No!
The heroes split up, with some assaulting the alien base, while the others awaken King Caesar with the statue and help from Princess Nami. King Caesar fends off Mechagodzilla for a while, but is beaten, and the group attacking the aliens is captured. Godzilla arrives and manages to eventually turn the tide of battle, destroying Mechagodzilla with the help of King Caesar. The humans destroy the alien hideout and kill the alien leader, and the statue is returned to its rightful place in Okinawa.
Yay!
Yay!
Quite the convoluted, twisty plot this time.
Such a big cast in this one.
Yeah, there was always one more man in it than I thought there was.
Yeah.
It was very much of its time. They basically came up with Keisuke's brother because they didn't think that the 10-year-old boys would buy an old man and a woman successfully completing an important task.
Or it almost feels like there's double of everything. Like, there are two professors, there are two Interpol agents who I thought were the same guy, but are actually two different guys.
Same. I thought he made it to the island, he did a costume change, but no.
Nope, he was captured.
A Godzilla movie with too many characters? No.
What?
Impossible.
This sounds familiar.
At least they weren't trying to tell the emotional arc of all of them. We would have been there for 7 hours.
So, Ryan, on that note, so obviously we're referring to the new American films that have too many characters as well.
Right.
And probably some of the others, too. In this movie, so fast-forwarding to Godzilla vs. Kong, something that stood out to me as being, like, kind of on the nose, I would say, is when Mechagodzilla shows up in the new movie and everyone's like, whoa, it's a robot Godzilla. And then they cut to Hunt for the Wilder People and he goes, no, that's Mechagodzilla. And like, I remember being like, boy, that's like the I am Khan moment in Into the Dark, in the Star Trek. Like, how does he know that? Like, that's like a nonsense word to anyone in this movie. But it's not out of line for this series because this movie, we're talking Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla in 1974, has the same moment where a character just goes, huh, it's made of metal. A fitting name would be Mechagodzilla. End of conversation. That was the end of it.
That seems to happen a lot in these movies. The Godzilla characters seem to have a lot of fun just coming up with a name. And I can't blame them. I would do the same thing in that situation.
They're always right, is the thing. Like, they get it right the first time. No, there's no workshopping of these names. He's not like, a fitting name would be Chrome Lizard Man. And then someone would be like, no, let's keep working on that over the next hour and a half or so.
In fairness, I would rather than have that than have some zombie movies where they refuse to call the zombies zombies. Where they're like, no, they're crawlers, they're runners, they're zombies. You know they're zombies. Just call them zombies. We'll hand wave it. Don't worry.
To be fair, Mechagodzilla basically just translates to Machine Godzilla. So maybe not the most creative name. Except Mecha is a borrow word. So it's in the English-Japanese combo, which sounds cool in any language. I have a really stupid story about relating to the cast of this movie. When I was a kid, I rented this movie from Blockbuster. My encyclopedic knowledge of Godzilla was not completely together yet. And the main character's actor's name in this movie is Masaki Daimon. And I don't know if somebody at Blockbuster's HQ fucked up or just at my store, but on my tape it said that Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla starred Matt Damon. And I was like, whoa! I didn't know he was in a Godzilla.
Oh my god.
For a second I was like, wait, he was in one, and then realized I was thinking of Matthew Broderick.
We get a return of some classic actors here. You got Hiroshi Koizumi as one professor, Akihito Harada as the other one, good old Kenji Sahara in it for like 2 seconds as the boat captain.
So I had a moment where when Akihito Harada showed up, I was like, boy, time has not been kind to him. And then I did the math and realized it had been almost 20 years, and I thought, oh, he looks great. Like, he looks really good. We're 20 years older than the first time we saw him.
He's in his late 40s here. I'd kill to look that good when I'm 48 or 49. Akihito Harada gets a bigger part than he has since maybe the original. I like some of the new faces, too. I think the spunky lady playing Psycho is Psycho. Playing Cycle. I think she's very charming. I wish they gave her more to do. I like the guy playing the alien leader. He's just mugging it up constantly.
Definitely is. He's certainly mugging.
Chomping on his cigar.
They really love their booze in the black hole planet.
Hold on. So why exactly? Like, I'm just asking, like, so they're monkey aliens from a black hole.
Right.
So I understood it. That's what it is.
There is a reason.
Okay, do I dare ask why? I'm scared of what this reason is.
Basically, the Planet of the Apes series was huge in Japan.
Oh,
made gangbusters. So they're like, hey, what if we had
ape planets?
Ape men in spacesuits in our movie.
Masterstroke.
And so that's all the reasoning they needed.
The transformation, once they die and they turn back to ape faces, was never good. And I like, and there are a lot of good things about this movie, but like the fact that like it wasn't like, oh, they like, I don't know, I guess I'm having a hard time expressing, like, it seemed like at a certain point, like, if you had one, they had one special effects shot where they're like, okay, we're gonna kill one of them, and then, oh, we see his face transform into a monkey, and we know he's a monkey alien, or he's a, you know, from the Planet of the Apes. Like, once is all you need, but the fact that they do it like 7 or 8 times and it's never good any of the times seems inexcusable to me. Like, it seems like you just cut your losses.
It's also that goopy noise that it makes. Like, it's not quite bubbling water, it's not quite electronic sound effect, it's just weird and off.
Just imagine Ryan turning into a monkey right now and me just going
like little ape sounds under the transformation.
Yeah, but even though they're dead.
I would say, though, from my brain cap of watching it as a child, I would be like, this is pretty sick and that's pretty cool, and I would love the number of times they did it, you know. So from that G rating audience, they got to repeat it for them. I also feel like when he was half-faced on the boat, that boat fight scene, I was really all there for it. I was there for the length of it. I was there for the shaky camera. The half-green face was spooky.
I think as long as you can recognize they had a low budget.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of impressive they decided to go for the makeup.
Yeah, like, was tech high at that time? That's also, too, I feel like anytime I watch any movie that's, like, pre-1990, I'm like, well, the tech was, you know, low-key bad back then.
Well, let me say it was below par.
Yeah.
But I like that they went for it, because every other alien in the Godzilla series, at least up to this point, I might be forgetting a later one, is just a person.
Yeah.
And they're like a little pale or some shit. This was the only time they went for a creature. And you can actually see under the terrible optical effect, they did like slow build up makeup like the Wolfman, which must have taken hours. So I'm like, all right, you went for it. It doesn't look good, but you went for it.
And I like that they give the leader little spikies. They were like, this guy, he's the leader. We're going to put little spikies on him.
He was extra mean, so he had an extra bad skin condition.
Now, Ryan, not to correct you on your Godzilla knowledge, but I'm pretty sure we've seen some cockroach aliens before this.
That's true, but that was a big model cockroach. I guess, like, I would have been more impressed if there was, like, a half-cockroach man walking around in Godzilla vs. Gigan.
This might be me just hallucinating, but weren't there, like, weird sperm rock aliens, too? Or did I just, like, invent that in my head?
That's true. I guess I'm saying, like, they never had, like, a creature-y alien that really interacted with the humans. They were always, like, cut away to cockroach or snake rock.
And now we know why.
This is a very old, familiar kind of feeling. Sam is back to his old role.
Yeah, that shit was weird when things were switched, though. That was unfortunate. I'm glad we're back here.
But Joanna, speaking of things I thought were fucking cool as a kid, I loved Agent Nonbara. I thought he was badass.
Yeah!
He does just kill a guy with piano wire, which I was still like, whoa!
He does.
Nonbara just laps everybody else in this movie, and it's not even fair.
Wait, he's the one with the dark outfit, right?
Dark outfit, long hair.
He's the main agent.
Oh, yeah. Okay, wait. I want it. My favorite line is on the boat when he goes, "Hey, on a beautiful night like this, you should talk about love." And then just leaves. That was him, right? God, I fucking loved him. If I was auditioning for that movie, I would have wanted to play that part.
He's great. Not only does he save his life, he's trying to be his wingman.
He's confusing too, because he shows up in this kind of villainy wearing all black, and he's like, "I'm a reporter, I need my money." Yeah. And you're like, oh, so he's gonna be the evil reporter guy. But no, tricky on that one.
I love that fake out. It's so obvious, it comes around to not being obvious
from the, like, straightforward storytelling of, like, the music was always like dun dun dun, the costuming, is he a bad guy, is he a good guy, we don't fully know. I just thought it was all very obvious, but in a way that was fun, and I was here for it. And, like, the shaky fight scenes, all of those aspects I thought were very fun.
I also get a kick how just Nonbara is very competent. Like, he seems to succeed where all the other protagonists keep fucking up and failing. And it made me think, like, how come there's never been a Godzilla movie where, like, instead of, like, ah, yes, I am reporter, archaeologist, random everyman, like, we don't have a secret agent or anything like that. Like, it was just kind of like, like, I feel like that would be an interesting twist, and I'm surprised they've never followed through on that, because Nonbara was just... He's just fun. He's just this guy like, yeah, I'm here to do my job. I don't give a fuck about the rest of you, but I'll save your life, kid. Why not?
I agree.
There was a police detective in Ghidorah, but you're right. I think there should be, like, a sleazy PI who's, like, the star of a Godzilla movie. It's like a crime movie and a Godzilla movie.
Oh, man.
That'd be fun.
Godzilla meets Chinatown.
I love how that one professor didn't help at all when an alien broke into his house.
Yeah, he just held the gun and didn't shoot.
And it took him like a minute to go pick up the gun.
Well, he knew not to shoot it because we hadn't set up that gun, but we had spent a lot of time setting up that pipe.
That's right. We needed to better understand the gun before it was fired.
He learned from Chekhov himself, that actor. And he was like, no, I'm not shooting this until you give us a close-up of this gun. In a previous scene.
I did like the dynamic between the, like, lead romantic guy and that gal. But that dynamic wasn't, like, shown much. Like, I liked when he's like, what your friends don't know, your enemies don't know either. Ha 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 ha. As they were, like, leaving the boat. But that was kind of about it.
I feel like if he wasn't condescendingly constantly leaving her out of the plan.
Right.
The movie would have been more fun. Where they could have been, like, going on adventures together.
But again, there were also just, like, too many people in the film to highlight, you know? It's like, they couldn't have just stuck with that.
I felt particularly weird about the Okinawans, because it was just this moment of, like, it just felt like an entire dropped plot, where we went from, grr, arg, you mainlanders, get off my island, to, alright, we'll sing the song and we'll summon Caesar for you. Aw, man. I'm glad the ancestors can now rest in peace, says old man who wished for death of the mainlanders.
I know, there's a very abortive, like, subtext about, you know, compensation for the colonization of Okinawa.
It's very strange.
Pretty progressive for the time, but it's like, it's not a complete thought.
That's what I was wondering. I'm like, is this an accident that they're dropping in there? Are they trying to say something, but they just didn't really go for it?
Yeah, it's definitely intentional. There's like way too much for it not to be.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's just not, it like, it never really comes together into a thing. You're not like, oh, these people should be made whole for the shit that happened to them. It's just like, oh no, they're just kind of quirky and angry, and we should bring back their statue.
Yeah.
Can I just throw some stats out really quick?
Sure.
About 62% of all U.S. bases in Japan are in Okinawa. They cover 25% of the island. There are about 26,000 people stationed there. Jeez. That is crazy. Damn. I just was reading that in a book recently, and it's like, they've just been there, and they just keep growing up since World War II. It's crazy.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's probably because they're searching for King Caesar.
That's true.
Yeah. It's the ultimate weapon for the mm-hmm. military.
You are correct.
We want to talk about King Caesar, whose name really should be King Shisa, but I guess Caesar sounds cooler to an American.
It felt odd. I felt like I was watching Shakespeare.
King Caesar is really redundant, too.
I know.
That's like saying Emperor Monarch. I'm so sorry.
No, it wasn't bad.
Nailed it. Guys, we need a sound effect for like every time someone nails a joke, you know? Cowabunga!
King Caesar is really redundant, too.
I know.
That's like saying Emperor Monarch.
Cowabunga!
King Shisa. He's a pretty cool monster. One of like my favorite little pieces of trivia is there are these semi-official illustrations that show like kaiju anatomy, like what's inside them. And King Caesar's was crazy the first time I saw him. He's not a living thing.
Oh, that's
he's like
cool.
An old construct. He has like bones made of gold, and he's filled with like bricks, and he has mirrors behind his eyes. That's why the beam goes in one and shoots out the other. I love it.
See, that's so much cooler than what he actually was in the film.
Hey, I liked his shaggy self. You know I always like a shaggy, tired monster.
Yeah, Matt, he's beautiful on the inside.
He looks pretty cool. I was just kind of disappointed by like, oh man, we put in all this effort to summon him and to get the statue and to wake him up, and then he's just like, yeah, I'll just do a little just a few punches here and there. It's like, that's all you got?
Right. It looks like someone had just seen Gremlins, which isn't possible because it hadn't come out yet, but that's for sure the vibe I got the whole time.
Yeah.
I had a similar thought, kind of, which is that between his kind of dragon-like face and kind of floppy ears, he reminded me of the monsters in the live-action Scooby-Doo movie.
Yes.
What an insult.
That's a deep cut.
No!
Those are among the ugliest screen monsters of all time.
And so is this one now, apparently.
Weren't you just standing him?
I love his floppy ears. I love how they pop up like a dog when he gets excited.
Yeah, he's so cute.
Sam, you say you like King Caesar, but you know what? I think you're a traitor. I think you might just be the kind of person to stab Caesar in the back.
A2, Matt?
Cowabunga!
Right, this show is a mess. This is great.
A glorious mess. Just like this movie, it's thematic, it's on purpose. I know I'm going to be in the minority on this one, but I love the King Caesar song. It's my jam.
No, I love them. They're always these, like, an old Russian ballad waltz. Every film, and I always love them.
Yeah, I was going to say, did any of you get a chance to watch the movie subbed? Because when I originally saw it, me and Ryan saw it in a theater, and it was the dub version, so it didn't have the subtitles for the song. But that song is, the actual lyrics, it's a little intimate, a little passionate.
It is.
Oh, what are they? I didn't see it. I tried to put subtitles on, and HBO Max was like, nope.
Yeah, specifically, she calls him my Caesar. And then she says, grant us our health. Listen, my heart is burning.
Yes, that was what threw me off. I was like, whoa, hey, missed opportunity. The love story between this priestess and King Caesar.
It sounds like we've got our fan fiction just ready-made.
You know what? We should legitimately all write one for this. the show.
Ooh.
Okay, and Matt Damon is in all of ours too.
Yes.
And Matt Damon as King Caesar. At what point did these movies suddenly start having like song numbers? Because it feels like that's gotten more common, where each one seems to have its like special, like its pop song.
This is nothing compared to what would happen, but we're definitely in an era where Godzilla has become more of a commercial product as we understand them today. So all sorts of ancillary merchandise could be sold off this guy. This is basically the only reason the movies kept getting made. It's all the toys and records they could sell. So yeah, there's always like a fun number in the 70s ones, whether it's on screen or not. I think there is an on-screen song in all of them except the one we're about to watch, though. The one we're going to watch next is the final one. Is a bit of a dark horse.
It's actually like a No Country for Old Men situation where there's no music at all. It just ends with Akihito Harada being like, "It all happened, but I realized I was having a dream, and then I woke up." And cut to black. Slam to black.
Not totally off base.
Did I miss something, or do the heroes just assume that aliens are after them, and then they have that suspicion confirmed later in the movie?
I don't think they knew that they were aliens until one of them died, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Or like one of them got wounded and he had like the half face, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, but before that happens, Keisuke says, "Ha! Those aliens will never know that we switched boats halfway through."
Oh, huh.
So he makes a blind assumption that aliens are after.
I think he was referring to them just being foreigners.
Oh, it's a little bit of Japanese xenophobia.
Yeah, that's correct.
There's a lot of pointless deception in this movie. It's like a running theme. There's no reason for Mechagodzilla to be disguised as Godzilla. There's no reason for Keisuke to keep leaving Psycho out of his plans. No reason for the Interpol guys to hide their identities for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even not really a reason for those guys to assault the alien base at the end. Because by the time they actually do anything,
it's over.
Godzilla is already in the process of ripping Mechagodzilla's head off.
Yeah, these are all valid points.
They had to fill 90 minutes, you know?
And you know what? This was, like, you're right. There are a lot of pointless deceptions, and there are a lot of characters, and there's like, you know, the Islander stuff doesn't get fully explored, and it's a little odd that it's like it's an ancient monster on an island prophecy and also aliens, and yet we can criticize all this, and yet I was less bored with this one than maybe the three or four before it.
I was gonna chime in that this is one of the snappiest, fastest paced Godzilla movies that I've seen. Like, a little bit to its detriment at times, but it was definitely like, oh yeah, like we're just here, like they're already getting rescued, okay, great, cool, fantastic. Whereas I remember Destroy All Monsters, there were moments where like, and now they've got to deal with the infiltration, and now they got the moon base taken over, and now they got to take back the moon base, and then they got to come back. And it's just like, it was very refreshing to just see a movie be like, nope, we're here to have fun. Okay, they're aliens. Okay, we're in their base. Okay, we blew up the supercomputer. All right, the monsters fight. All right, we're good. We're done. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, even in like, I didn't think too much. I didn't have time to be thinking about why anyone was deceiving anyone. And granted, part of it was that I was just like, oh, yeah, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense. But that's, I'll take that. I'll take that over sitting there and having nothing better to do than poke holes in the movie.
You're very right. I don't mean to make it sound like this was a huge issue for me. It's all part of the fun. I was interested as I picked up on it, like, wow, this is like a thing with this movie, almost to the extent where I'm like, what's the subtext here? But there was no subtext.
No subtext to be found.
Well, yeah, Joanna couldn't get the subtext working on her HBO Max.
Cowabunga!
I love the fights in this.
Loved them.
The one at the refinery especially is iconic.
Made me want to watch Kill Bill.
There is a lot of like Kill Bill, Sergio Leone kind of standoff stuff in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mechagodzilla was a surprisingly like disciplined fighter. Like, I'm like, is he just doing karate over here? And I'm like, yeah, I think he is.
But yeah, the refinery scene is a classic. It has the first ever beam fight, which is like a whole thing for Godzilla nerds. The thing where the two beams connect and they like push each other back and forth.
That was the first time?
Mm-hmm. The first and last time it will be enjoyable.
That predated some Star Wars shit, right?
It sure did. It created some Harry Potter as well.
It all comes from this. I don't know if it literally does, but...
Actually, it comes from the silent film The Beam Boys from 1921.
Jun Fukuda's favorite movie as a child, so he had to honor it.
Is that really a big thing among fans, Ryan? Like, people are like, ooh, those beams!
Yeah, it was a central part of the Godzilla series of video games. You could have the beams connect and you had the push yours to the end. It's like, I'm sorry, I don't know. I feel like I've been too insulting to the fan base recently, even though they deserve
They deserve it.
He apologizes as he digs them again.
It's like the fanboy reaction with like the two lightsabers crossing, where they like, you see it in a trailer and you hear everybody go, ah! It's like that sort of thing. It's just a big flashy action moment. It hits everybody because they're not wrestling, which is what some fans don't like for reasons I can't fathom.
Oh, I was going to say that's my favorite thing about this movie. So you won't be able to fathom this, but I think that the fight scenes in this are largely successful to me because there is less rolling and tumbling and a lot more pyrotechnics. And there are so many explosions, and there are so many explosions close to these actors and costumes, and that is inherently more fun than watching people take a brief tumble together.
See, I think you're thinking of the bad examples where they just jump on the ground and roll around. But I like some of the earlier choreographed fights, like the one in King Kong versus Godzilla. I like when they get a little bit physical and silly, but I like a mixture of all the different things, you know.
I like whenever Godzilla gives anyone a good kick, which I don't remember if he did in this one, but I always love when he just gives him a good old kick with that meaty thigh. And then I loved that throwback when he did that little jaw crack open, because that seems to be a real regular move now. But I feel, when they're only tumbling around, it's a little hunky-dory.
Mechagodzilla punting other monsters lives rent-free in my brain. But I think for me, this is definitely kind of like a high mark for Godzilla fights, because I agree with Ryan. It's very balanced. You have some beam spam, you have some wrestling, you have Mechagodzilla just having all these tricks that he throws out. You have Godzilla doing some very like fun physical shenanigans, but also just silly stuff where it's like, I'd completely forgotten about Godzilla's lightning training montage, and it's like, I'm gonna learn to control lightning, haha, can't get me now.
That was a little mini arc for Godzilla. He's gone from being weak to electricity to being like, no man, I'm gonna take all the lightning bolts, I'm gonna be a big magnet today.
With his like, woo, his like,
yep. Yes, come hither.
He had a moment when he went, ah, drats. He almost literally snapped.
Oh, yeah, he like snaps.
Very cute. He was also bleeding out the side of his neck at one point. I don't think we've seen that before.
Yeah, Gigan had some pretty gruesome shots, but this one matches it. We get a lot of spurting arteries from Godzilla, from the ape alien. Port Angelus gets his jaw ripped open. This, by the way, is a response to the competition. Gamera, which we'll get to someday, maybe. That series was very bloody in an appeal to 10-year-old boys, so Godzilla had to start doing it too. But it just made me feel gross and sad as a kid, so there.
Really? The blood splurt?
Yeah.
You thought, damn, that looks so realistic. I'm so sad.
Yeah. I was like, this is icky. Aww. The very last thing I have to say is a very weird thing, but I was like, damn, I'm feeling this. Which is when they were taking a little cruise from Japan back to Okinawa, and it had such like a 70s glamour vibe. I got that feeling that's like nostalgia, but you never lived it. I'm like, I want to be on that swanky cruise. It's just a day and a night, so you won't get bored. Living it up in the lap of luxury, going to Japan or to Okinawa.
I totally agree. And when the captain at the end was like, I know you valued that possession, so I scooped it out of the ocean for you. I was like, what a nice captain. I would want to be on that boat. The side, the painting on the side looked nice. Yeah, it looked like a great time.
Who was driving the ship that whole time when you were grabbing that out of the ocean? That's my question.
Sam, do you think cruise captains have to stand by the wheel 24 hours a day?
I would like them to.
In that time period, 100% they had to.
Also, I just don't. It seems to me that if you're on a cruise ship, something terrible is going to happen, just based on the way the news works.
That's true.
I'm not taking any chances when a captain's getting away from the wheel for a second. I want them there, stationed there. And I just don't want to go on a cruise. That's the short answer.
See, that's the weirdest thing, is I've never wanted to go on a cruise either, but I was like, this one is the perfect length, perfect 70s glamour vibe. I want to be on this specific cruise.
I didn't feel nostalgia for the cruise necessarily, but I definitely was like, those costumes throughout the whole movie, I'm like, these look great. Like, everybody just looks so fresh in whatever they're wearing. And I don't typically think about that with Godzilla movies.
In the fight scenes, their tapered pant legs look so sharp. When they would get those little, stick their little cappy out as they're fighting, I was like, damn, those are some sharp pants. I gotta get people to bring them back. They're kind of back in Brooklyn, but bring them more, you know?
That's right.
Yeah, maybe if you're trying to kick someone, or at least obscure their vision with your kick, a bell-bottom provides a little extra coverage.
It really does.
I stand by all of the ape face transitions to be not very good, and I don't know why we needed to do that so many times. But the transformation from Mecha disguised as Godzilla to Mecha in his metal skin suit was awesome. That was great. Yeah. Big fan.
That's another iconic moment in that refinery scene. Although it always, in my memory, I remember it being like the flames from the refinery burning it off. But no, it's like some kind of device. But it's cool either way.
I've been keeping a running list of how I describe the Godzillas and the Godzilla films I've seen. So for this one, we have Muhammad Ali Godzilla, because, you know, he's a little long, little lanky, he's, you know, definitely more of a bruiser, kind of boxer type. So
I just want to give a shout out to my favorite shot in the film is when they arrived after the cruise and they were in the hotel. And she was standing on the balcony, and then they did that zoom out, and then Interpol agent number 2 walked into the shot and, like, put his sunglasses on, maybe. Or maybe he didn't, but it felt like that would fit the vibe. That was my favorite shot of the whole film.
That had to be Fukuda's, like, point of pride. He's like, I know we have to rush through the rest of this, but I'm getting the snap zoom.
I stand by him continuing with the character scenes. He continues to have... If not, I'm not saying that, like, he's the finest director of the 1970s, but I am saying that he, like, there's just a little more momentum in the way he blocks and shoots scenes with people talking. And that's always welcome.
Yeah. I think he's a little sloppier here than he has been, but still a very action-oriented director.
He's sloppier here, but this is also the best monster fights of any of his movies to date.
I will totally back that up. My final point before I come to a closing is I love how everyone was so chased in the death sauna. Even when they were dying, they wouldn't even take their jackets off. They wouldn't take any clothes off whatsoever, even when it would have prolonged their lives for a few more minutes. Jesus. I know it would be unlikely in a Godzilla movie to suddenly cut to them and then all three of them are full frontal naked, but imagine how memorable that scene would have been.
You save that for your fan fiction, Mr. Man.
Oh yeah, this is for sure what the fan fiction is going to be.
It's going to be about the death sauna. Actually, you know what? That does sound like a fan fiction setup. We're coming to the end of the original series, guys. So this movie has a lot of lasts. We got some farewells. This is the last one Jun Fukuda directed. This is the last score by Masaru Sato, who was sort of the number 2 guy.
Oh, I like the score in this one.
They get kind of a rap as the B team, which is how I even introduced them. But after we've been on this journey, I've come around. They don't deserve to be known as the B team. They're both great. This is also the last story contributed by Shinichi Sekizawa, who you guys know is near and dear to my heart, has more to do with why I love Godzilla than anyone else. His everything goes fantasy approach to the series is what has allowed it to live so long, in my opinion. And he hadn't actually written a script for about 5 years at this point, but this is his last story outline, the last little piece of Godzilla storytelling. He slid under the Toho door. So it's a fond farewell to all three of these gentlemen.
Congrats to them all.
All appreciated. Let the record show that from moment one, I was on the Fukuda train. And I'm going to miss him.
With that farewell, let us go adieu to judgments. Godzilla evangelists, it is our holy duty to assign each movie its proper place in Godzilla Afterlife. It could be in Godzilla Heaven, where the most glorious movies reign, Godzilla Purgatory in the middle, or Damned to Godzilla Hell. So let's see what everybody thought. I'm gonna kick it off with Sam.
It's a Godzilla Heaven for me. I admit that I think at this point, I'm trying to think of how to put this, it was all right throughout, and I wasn't bored or frustrated by it, and I liked the pyrotechnics. I'm realizing that really, other than maybe a couple of the first ones, there haven't been any where I've been able to like say, other than like it was all right throughout. That's about the best I can give, really, to anything since the very earliest ones, maybe. Maybe not the second one.
I think you were enthusiastic about Smog Monster.
Yeah, I think at times, you're right, that had, like, some moments of brilliance for me. But yeah, I thought this was, it was cool, and it's like, probably among the better ones to me of the series. So I'm putting it in a heaven. I will say, and this has, you can read into this how you will, but I did finish the movie and had like a taste of like, it was all right. Like it was an all right taste in my mouth. And for some reason, I just immediately switched over and watched The Princess Diaries. And now I'm in a very different place having done a double feature of this and The Princess Diaries. So it's a heaven. Long story short, it's a heaven.
Sam, you are rocking up the heavens these days. I'm just saying.
And with that, Matt, where do you place it?
This one for me is a Godzilla heaven, but I'd say it's like heaven with the like red tape that if there's like enough other heavens, they might boot it down to purgatory. Like it's on heaven probation. Like we might let you stay in heaven permanently, but you got to prove yourself a little bit longer. But it was fun. It was just very easy, breezy. Didn't overstay its welcome, had a lot of, like, high marks for the series, brought in a character that everybody loves. So for me, it's just like, yep, I can put this in heaven for now, and then if I see a few other films, I may adjust or kind of course correct based on that.
Makes sense. So you've got a 3-month contract. In a weird way, you said basically the same thing as Sam, but in a more positive sounding way. Joanna?
For me, it would be a high purgatory, which, again, still, are we allowed to break up purgatory? We're not sure yet, but if we can, it's high purgatory because, yeah, it was fun. It had all the things, you know, it had a gazillion characters, but it had some fun fights, some fun sound effects, a kooky PI. I think for me, I had a similar feeling as Sam. All right. I think for me, heaven, it's usually got to be, you know, pretty spectacular in that I'll have to, you know, actively want to potentially watch it again in my life and be okay with that. And so in that framing of, hey, if this is for kids, you know, it doesn't live up at all to Monsters Attack in my mind. So, yeah, purgatory.
Dude, that's one that's hard to beat. That's terms of like the pure best kid movie,
but that's why it's in heaven. That's why it lives where it does in my brain and my fake ranking system.
Yeah, Sam, where does this rank on would put on in a background at a party?
Probably pretty high.
See, this I would put on in background at a party, but it's as like, would you watch this versus a different film that you haven't seen that you want to watch? I don't know.
Someday you'll have to do your official tier list.
Of party filler movies. I think weirdly the criteria for that involves being just having weird imagery and being also slow enough that I wouldn't want to put on the dialogue. Okay. And this like wasn't that. But it would be a fun, you know, all the like tin toy missile fingers would be a, you know, that would be good. That's good party stuff.
I've now realized that your opinion is lower on the movies that you mentioned in this context than I thought. But yes, for me, it's Heaven. And in fact, I was shocked at how much I enjoyed it. Like, I don't know if I just really needed this, but like, I think this is number 15 or 14 on my list right now. I'm going to have to put it in the top 10 now.
Wow. That's a shakeup.
There's something about it just being the best stupid Godzilla movie, I think. And I think there's a real joy in that for me, just in terms of like, we don't care about anything else but being bright and colorful and fun, and we're going to stay away from anything too irritating or stupid, but just indulging in the pure fun silliness of it all. And I love it in that context. With that all done, we've got a little fan message.
Aww.
Hey.
We need some more, by the way. So send them our way.
Right on up, goddammit. We can't record another episode until we get more fan mail.
This one's from Brandon Minich on Twitter. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I just found the pod today, and as a Godzilla fan, I love hearing people who have never seen the movie's views on them. I really hope you guys will do a review of Singular Point, because I can't imagine how fun we just made your day.
Good timing.
I hope it's as funny as you imagine.
How does that theme song go again? It's like good times.
Aimlessly scrolling through a computer screen.
Text. Emo blonde boy.
So thank you, Brandon. And if you want to have your message read on the show, send us an email, a tweet, comment on our YouTube videos, or best of all, a review. Apple Podcasts, much easier to leave a review on now. Please do it. I don't know if there's anywhere else you can review us. I just got us on Amazon Music, which I thought we were on, but apparently we weren't. But now we are. So if that's your preferred podcast provider and you're hearing us for the first time, hi.
Hi.
We really like it when you share the show with people. People who love cult movies, people who love monsters, people who love people shooting the shit about crazy stuff like this. They'll all love it. Tell your friends, tell your family, please. Somebody else beg with me tonight. I feel like I've done it.
I wish I'd recorded this into an ad that we could distribute. Tell your friends, please tell.
Real King Caesar heads.
Caesar heads.
There's nothing more fun than hearing people talk about your favorite thing. I re-listen to episodes of podcasts about things I like. And that's like the craziest thing ever, to listen twice. But I'm saying you should listen to us at least 3 times.
Minimum of 7 if you can. And comment every time.
But yes, please share. And I hope you enjoyed this little visit to Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla. Next time, no surprise, we're going to be talking about the direct sequel, Terror of Mechagodzilla.
I'm going to hop in with the working title, Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla, : A Royal Engagement.
And that's where we'll leave you. So keep spreading the word of Godzilla.
Genovia.
Godzilla Evangelists is produced by me, Ryan Sargent, with support from my friends Joanna Brodecki and Sam Schlenker. All our incredible music is composed by Robert Mai, and our wonderful artwork is drawn by Cassidy Stone. This episode was edited by Julia Waldman. Special thanks to our families, friends, and the talented artists who made the movies that we talked about today. Godzilla Evangelists is a satirical, critical work, not affiliated or endorsed by Toho, Legendary Pictures, or anyone behind the Godzilla series. Visit our website at GodzillaEvangelists.com. We're also on Twitter at GodzillaCast and Instagram at GodzillaEvangelists. If you prefer to listen to us online, we have a YouTube channel. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you join us again next time. In the meantime, keep spreading the word of Godzilla.